Just a friendly reminder, the October Patreon prize giveaway is coming up at the end of the month. If you've yet to register, head over to WTSPWorldWar2.com, click on the Patreon link, sign up and subscribe. All you have to do is be a paid active subscriber. At the end of the month, we're going to pick the winner for this month's prize, which is a beautiful prize pack provided by our friends over at 1791 Everyday Carry, valued over $100, containing different items from 1791 Everyday Carry, including multi-tool carriers, flashlight carriers, the items you need to release the bulk from your pocket from the daily items you must carry to complete your job. For more information, head over to d-410.com/1791EDC. Once again, all you have to do to get your name entered into the prize pack giveaway is go to WTSPWorldWar2.com, click on the Patreon link, sign up and subscribe. You have to be an active subscriber by the end of the month. Your name will automatically be entered into the prize pack giveaway.
Oh, hey, Dennis, there, I found out a guy I work with has a Japanese sword from a Japanese officer's sword. He showed me a picture of it, and it's one of the mass-produced ones because you can see the brass sheet metal on the scabbard. And we're wondering about how to get it back to, or see if it belongs to anybody. He's going to bring it in one day.
I've got and the I'm perfect gonna... person.
Yeah?
Daniel Don? King.
Daniel King?
Daniel King.
Okay.
He's written, he's fluent in Japanese, and he's written all kinds of books about the, from the Japanese perspective, and he's returned many flags and items to families in Japan, and he's here in Texas. He was on our podcast. You should listen to his that episode. It was pretty awesome.
For some reason, I got a flashback from something I've seen somewhere. It may be an old episode of American Pickers, but I think maybe they used to stamp something underneath the handguard, like they removed it underneath the shank.
Yeah. Well, see, that's when my grandfather brought one back. And we took it apart, and on the tang, there was like three or four kanji letters, I guess you'd call them, and then there was a serial number. And we were able to, I think he went to the embassy in Houston. Well, I think it was in Houston, where he wrote the embassy, and they directed him to an individual. He gave them the serial number. And was able to connect them that way. But I don't know if that's still possible or if there's a better way to get it back to families.
I'll ask Dan. I'll get you in touch with Dan.
Well, as long as the Hall of the Empire didn't burn down in 1973, they should find it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The cars. Yeah.
You guys ready to get started?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. Welcome to another new episode. We are back after, a long 2 weeks for those of us in the path of Helene and Milton. Our hearts and minds and souls and prayers go out to those of you in North Carolina and Tennessee and Georgia affected by the devastation that was Helene.
Brutal.
And then those of us in Florida, particularly those of you in Bradenton and Tampa, being a member of the Florida Historical Preservation Society myself, a large number of our Florida-based World War II reenactors live in that area. And so prayers to those of you. I know most of you came out relatively unscathed, but some of you did suffer a little bit of damage here and there. And so thoughts and prayers to all of you. We have a guest tonight, and as we tend to do, we allow the person who booked the guest and who has the relationship with the guest to introduce the guest. And so without me saying guest one more time in the last 38 seconds, Dennis, why don't you introduce our
guest? Our guest tonight is Roger Gray, a longtime friend of mine for a couple decades. And interesting reason for him to be with us tonight. And, you know, the grand architect in creating humans. And we've talked about this before. Deposits within the heart and soul of some a spark that ignites within them a desire, even a necessity, to archive their family's history. And in some, it's the history of those who perhaps sacrificed on their behalf, or maybe it's because of, you know, the spark that we have the works of Caesar and Marcus Aurelius from long, long ago. And thank God for that, because we would have not have any of those historical, you know, written records without these. Today, we call them historians. The vast majority, though, have no degree or certification labeling them as such. They are historians all the same. And because of these multitudes through the years, we know what it was like to take the Oregon Trail. And we know what it was like cutting through and snatching, grabbing vines through the Congo. We know what it felt like and sounded like and how cold it was to survive the sinking of the Titanic. We know how amazing it was to sit at the feet of Lincoln. And it behooves us to sit at the feet of those who have answered this call to preserve those stories. Roger Gray is one of those who, fueled by that spark, went on to uncover and make known the story of a hero of his grandfather. And he grew to esteem him very highly. So it's with great pride that I introduce to you and welcome to the podcast, my good friend of decades, Roger Gray. Roger, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's an honor, honored to be here. I'm really excited. This is a great opportunity.
Have you always loved history?
From early on, I've always been fascinated with, you know, the knights in shining armor and just, you know, anything to do with history. Matter of fact, I think it was in eighth grade. I got real sick. I was hospitalized with mono, and I read The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire in eighth grade. Yeah. among other books. But I've always been fascinated with history.
My goodness. Ryan, how long did that take you to read that?
Oh, it's probably a month, I think. Yeah. It was because, you know, there were some big words in boring sections, but hey, you know.
I just want to point out before we pass over what may be a little nothing. You're talking about how you got mono, you're bedridden, and that got you into history. How much rediscovery of history, your correction of history, has come from those who were bedridden? Because after all, we remember what, short 6 years ago, the correction of the Iwo Jima statue in a photo because a guy had a kidney removed and he was laid up in bed for the hospital. And he was a historian, and he was looking through different documentation. Like, wait a minute, this cat from this photo 4 hours later has on the exact same gear as the person who is identified as somebody. Just because he happened to look at two different pieces of documentation, had two different photos of two different gentlemen, he sorted out this huge misidentification that's been going on for 80 years, all because he had a kidney removed and he was laid up in bed with nothing better to do.
That's interesting. Well, I'd always been sick. You know, I had asthma and all that stuff as a little kid. So, you know, certain times of the year, I couldn't go outside. You know, I couldn't go outside because of pollen and all that stuff. So I stayed inside and read, and it was always like, you know, King Arthur's tales and, you know, anything to do with history. And yeah, I don't know. Of course, I read books like Conan and H.G. Wells and stuff, but, you know, it was, I was always drawn to things that have happened. And it's, I think I mentioned to Dennis, the thing that draws me is about history now is I like to find out, when something happened, I like to know why it happened. And then the actual event, and then what that did later on, you know, what were the ripple effects afterwards and how it all ties together? Because they're all linked, you know, events are always linked together.
Yeah, it's like Jeff often says on this show, you know, if you want to learn about World War II, you really need to start with World War I because it's I was going to say stipulations, but the results of the peace treaty that came out of World War I that directly influenced and led to World War II.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's very true.
This episode is brought to you by our friends over at Fume. Fume cartridges are crafted from medical-grade polyester designed for use with essential oils. Fume, a non-vape, non-nicotine, non-tobacco device, works by replacing the hand-to-mouth fixation, calming nervous tension through fidgeting, and distracts you from the bad habits with delicious flavors. Psychologists have shown stopping a bad habit cold turkey is very hard for your brain. The Fume handheld device has a built-in fidget, also has a weight similar to most vape pens. If you're interested in replacing old bad habits with new good habits, head on over to tryfume.com/D410M and get yourself a free pack of toppers with your purchase. The toppers is a perfect new accessory designed with your comfort in mind. Slip it onto the mouthpiece for a softer, warmer feel. So replace those old habits with a new habit, a good habit. Simply go to tryfume.com/D410M. That's tryfume.com/D410M.
Roger, were you, did you make models? Let me think. I think most of us when we were young growing up did made models of, you know, tanks. Yeah. And then took like, I know that me, I would put like the, get the oven on the stovetop and then yeah. heat up a knife and then slice into a Panzer, oh, yeah. You know, and make some, you know, damage or whatever. Did you do any of that stuff?
Yeah, actually, my favorite was to build aircraft. I built a lot of like the Stuka and Focke-Wulf, other ones. But I built a couple ships, and ironically, I built an LCI and landing craft infantry. It's a model made by Lindbergh, and I remember I was either working on it or I had just finished it, and I was painting it. And my granddad, he walks in and I said, look at this ship I just built. He looks at it, had the weirdest look on his face, and he just walked off. Huh. You know, at the time I was offended, you know, I was like, well, you know, I built this, I'm proud of it. And you just walked off. Little did I know, you know, so
it's interesting you say that, because I have a flashback to like Christmas 1983, my basement of my grandparents' home. As our listeners know, my grandfather did grave registration over in Europe, World War II.
Oh, goodness.
I got this new sweet toy I asked for. It was a G.I. Joe Jeep, straight up wheelie Jeep. And I remember I opened that, and there was, because on the boxes, they had the illustrated a version of the toy that was inside with the action scene. And I remember it was blazing red background. You had the Jeep driving, and G.I. Joe scrolled across top, and I showed my grandpa, and he just, that same look, he didn't like walk away, but he definitely didn't share the same enthusiasm, because I never thought about it, but could you imagine how weird it had to be from that generation 40 years later, the vehicle that he rode in to go clean up his comrades and his counterparts is now a toy, an action figure toy for entertainment of your grandchildren. And how bizarre that had to be. I mean, it's one thing to have the little army men, but to actually have cartoons and G.I. Joes, and, you know, imagine if they were at a cognitive, you know, I'm sure a lot of them are, but, you know, we know how they felt with Save a Private Ryan, but to sit down and, like, watch modern-day versions of Call of Duty and Battlefield, it's just, it has to be weird. Yeah. It has to be bizarre to think that this horrible atrocity that you've lost so many friends with is now a form of entertainment for your grandchildren and great grandchildren.
You know, I can kind of identify with that. My, I was in search and rescue, PJ, and, my son came home from the, I don't know, the store with his mother, and he had an action figure, and it was a PJ, and it just really struck me odd. I looked at it and I was like, you know, at first I just kind of shook my head. I was like, no, we didn't wear that gear, you know, but then it was like, okay. So he knew I didn't like it, and he just put it up, never took it out and played with it. But it's weird.
I felt kind of left in the dark. My parents are buying me these G.I. Joes. I remember back in the day, they're $3.50 a piece for an action figure. Hawk, the main G.I. Joe. On the back, they have his civilian name. His last name's Abernathy. My last name is Abernathy. And no one ever said, hey, Don, this guy's got the... Professor Abernathy on Chili Willy. We had the same last name. No one made a big deal about it. I didn't. I was 35 before I found out the Hawk and G.I. Joe had the same last name as me. Just saying. They could have pointed it out.
That's great.
Yeah. Hey, Roger, I was wondering, you know, when was it, you know, you're building models and you're reading history and all that. When was it that you realized for the first time that you actually had a significant participant in these events around you this whole time since you were born? And when was that? When did that occur?
Oh, I don't know. You had these family legends, you know, of your grandfather did this in the Pacific. You know, I knew he had been a sailor. I knew he had been in the Pacific, you know, and I always thought, oh, that was cool. You know, we'd watch war movies and, you know, the sands of Iwo Jima and, you know, all that. And I'm, you know, think, oh, he was there. But I really didn't know, I guess, until I,
you had episodes, right? That you would see that one stark episode. I remember you telling me about you guys were roofing. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, my grandparents built a home in East Texas, just about an hour and a half north of Houston, and it was on the flight path of a carrier jet from Ellington Air Force Base to I believe the Air Force Base outside of Shreveport. So we were up there roofing. I was about 16 at the time, 15 or 16, and that jet flew over and let off a sonic boom. And he did the whole sailor shuffle. I mean, just, you know, looked like a goalie going after a ball. And my dad and I reached out and grabbed him, and it blew my mind. I just really started riding ambulance as an Explorer Scout. So I kind of knew, you know, shell shock and all that. It didn't click until my dad pulled me aside later and said, yeah, he saw some stuff, you know,